getting through that middle, making it all make sense, getting to where it all holds together, that is hard. And that is where so many people stumble and fall. This is Taylor Stevens, the New York Times bestselling and award-winning author of the kick-ass Vanessa Michael Monroe thrillers, and this is the Taylor Stevens Show with my good friend Steve Campbell, where we are kicking writing in the butt, one word at a time.
Today we're talking about plot holes and how to find and fix plot holes in your stories. But before we get to that, we had an episode a few weeks back on titles. And at that time, Taylor was searching around for a title for her new book. She may still be searching around for a title for her new book. I do think that she at least has something that someone is happy with now. But it's possible she's still searching. But we got an email from a listener named David. And David...
Best email in the whole wide world.
It was amazing. It was amazing. And he said, were you guys talking in titles today, like some kind of code? I made some voice notes and typed them up at lunch. Some are winners. He actually just used the words that we used in the order that we used them and put together a bunch of titles in different genres.
I aspire to this level of brilliance.
You would have no problem with titles if you just had David around all the time.
I know.
So in action adventure, and some of these things, I'm reading these and saying, did we actually say this? And I'm hoping it was you. The silly ones I'm hoping was you, and the ones that sound brilliant I'm hoping were me, but I'm pretty sure it's the opposite. So he categorized these by genre. In an action adventure, I love this first one, Call to Action. Tell me you wouldn't buy that book. That's what the title of your new book should be, Call to Action. And then there is Confusion Factor. And Squint to See. Which I could see as a sort of like a cozy mystery with an elderly woman who solves crimes and knits. Drama titles, Written in Stone, Good Reasons, and those types of things. And of course, thrillers. So Taylor, pay attention to these. This one of these might be the one. In fact, one of these is, I'm going to use it for sure. But the first one was In the Dark. And the next one was, I remember you talking about these words you wanted in your title. And you were saying, you know, words like kill, blood, death. And so that's one of his titles. Kill, blood, death. And then Copycat Factor, which I really like. And the one that I think is perfect for me is... One last question. It's a story about a podcaster who asks one last question and his guest accidentally gives away some critical information and has to kill him and steal the audio.
No! It's awesome. So awesome.
Then he has some YA titles. The first is This Is How It Happened. Would Be Fun. Not So Cool. I'm really hoping that was you that said that. Not So Cool. Not Real Crazy. And You Don't Know.
Those are great titles.
They are. And then Red Hot Romance.
Okay.
All right. I'm a little squeamish with these, but the first title is The Other End. And the second is Prime the Pump. And you've read these and you're still cracking up.
I want that level of creative genius in my life. Please, God, strike me with whatever disease he has.
And then nonfiction, getting the facts wrong and fixing your brain. And I can totally imagine one of us saying either one of those things during the course of a podcast. And remember when we were talking about the colon books?
Yes.
No More Than Four, A Series of Mysteries. Oh, so David, thank you so much for not only providing us both with a good laugh, but providing us with the intro material for this week's show. And hopefully you guys out there got a laugh out of this as well.
That was awesome. Thank you.
So this week's show is about finding and fixing plot holes in stories. But before we really dig into how to do it, Taylor, what's the biggest plot hole anyone's found in one of your stories? And I don't mean a reader. I mean someone, an editor or something that's like, this is, you could drive a truck through this. Have there been any?
No, that I know of. But I think that's because the weeding out process of getting an agent to take your book, getting the agent to sell the book to the editor is such a difficult one that if there had been those enormous plot holes in the story, it probably wouldn't have been agented to begin with, I think. Or it would have had to have been a story that the agent loved so much and she could see an easy way to fix the plot holes. Obviously there was a really strong learning curve for me. My plots have become much tighter since I first started because I've learned how to plot, which I did the first book completely by the seat of my pants. And I've learned through working with editors what it is that they're looking for. But I've had lots of other things that were big issues in terms of story structure or character things that, motivations that I just had to keep working until I got right. But there have been things that I've worked on prior to showing them to everybody where I've found plot holes in them that I'm like, this is just not working, and I've had to sit down and fix it. So just because they didn't find it didn't mean they never existed.
So how do you spot them? In my own mind, probably for a lot of people out there listening as well. I mean, you spend so much time with the material, you've written it, you understand exactly what the motivations are for everyone. And when you read it, you're imparting your own knowledge into what you're reading. So it's hard for me and maybe for other people out there as well to spot those things. So how do you spot them?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is define what is a plot hole. Because that might mean different things to different people. In my mind, when I hear the word plot holes, I'm thinking story problems of stuff that just doesn't make sense. Conveniences that are, stuff is put together because it makes the story exciting, but there's no logical jump from one to the other. In my mind, that's what I think of when I think of a plot hole. What do you think of when you think of a plot hole?
I think of things where, I'm trying to think of a specific example in my own work. And I can't think of anything particularly specific, but there'll be little comments next to something like, why did they do this? This doesn't make any sense. And then it's like, well, they did this because of, all these other things, and it didn't make sense. And then you have to go back and fix it. So in my mind, it's in a lot of cases, it's character motivation type things that lead to the plot holes, because there's not really a valid reason for them to have done something, that it's just they do it to move the plot forward.
Okay, so when you talk about that, I'm thinking, oh, my God, those are so easy to fix. Because all it takes is some inner dialogue, a conversation, or something like that to make that work, because the story still holds together. The worst kind of plot hole I can imagine is where the story just doesn't work, because of whatever reason. The timeline isn't there. The story itself isn't the content isn't interesting enough. The connection between topics is missing a bridge, where the story's just a mess because there's these big gaping missing pieces to it that should have connected one to the other, but don't. I know in my own work, like when I'm writing a book, getting close to finishing a book, I'm usually trying to figure out what comes next. I really don't like to get to the end of one book and then be like, well, now what? Because it takes me so long to develop a story and to get the ideas tight and where everything fits. I guess you could say to have a story that doesn't have plot holes in it. And so, but it takes a while for me to get that there. And so usually by the time I'm wrapping up the first draft of a book where it's starting to really come together and it's cohesive and all the really hard thinking parts are done, and now I'm down to polishing and fixing and tweaking, I'm already starting to think about what comes next. And sometimes that starting to think about it translates into building out the plot, into writing, getting rough material down. And there was this one that I was working on that I had gotten the plot all figured out on paper, and I had actually written some opening scenes, and that was all really good. But there was this part in the middle where I knew certain things had to happen, but the triggers and the events that led up to each one of them were all very, very convoluted in my head. I couldn't get them straight. It was sort of like the snake eating its tail type situation where if this happened, then that happened. I had to get the order, the structure of it. And it took some serious thinking to sort it out of just writing lots and lots of words and you know, trying to develop scenes and journaling to get, you know, where's the character in this place? And if I hadn't done all of that, and if it had just been a sequence of events, there would have been some big gaping plot holes there because there's no bridge to connect one to the other, no logical progression of the development of the story, I would think.
Okay, and that makes sense, and it sort of ties in with an issue that I've been having. I've actually went through and plotted out what I'm working on now, and the plot, while I was plotting it out, that's a fairly in-depth plot. I don't mean in-depth. It's I don't know, just the plot outline is like 10,000.
The level of detail that went into it?
Yeah, there's a lot of detail in it. So it was like 10,000 words. And so, and it all held together just fine in my mind while I was reading the plot and understanding it, or reading the outline and understanding it. And then when I started writing it, about a third of the way in, I won't say it began to fall apart, but I began to see cracks. And those cracks stopped me in my tracks. And one of the cracks was that my antagonist was not bad enough to support the rest of the book.
Okay.
And so I needed to go back, or I need to go back and fix that. I had a situation in mind, and that flows through to the end of the book, and there is an ending, but I realize a third of the way through that, hey, this is pretty good, and it needs more. It needs more from the protagonist to drive the story, and it needs a way better ending than what I had originally planned for.
So, like, that's the type of stuff, like, I'm sitting here listening to this going, oh, man, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, because that absolutely happens in the writing process. And that's where plotting helps, and that's where being able to see those cracks is really, really fantastic, because you're saving yourself from having to write the whole book and then getting to the end and realizing that it doesn't work because of things that happened earlier. And, you know, in what I've learned from my limited experience so far, and I say limited because there's some people who've, you know, got 50, 60, 70 books under their belts, and, you know, I'm nowhere near that. But in my experience, it's one thing to write a strong beginning, and it's another thing to have your ending in mind. But getting through that middle, that's what makes or breaks an author. That's what makes or breaks a book. That's why they call it the beginning, the muddle, and the end. Because that middle, that's what separates the wannabes from those who do, is getting all the way through the book. And that is why very few publishers or editors will accept unfinished manuscripts, why agents won't even bother reading an unfinished manuscript, and why if an author changes publishing houses, even though they could submit an idea at their former publisher and sell the idea because it was part of their contract, if they're going to go to a new publishing house, almost without fail, and there are obviously going to be exceptions to this, they're going to have to submit a completed manuscript, because getting through that middle, making it all make sense, getting to where it all holds together, that is hard. And that is where so many people stumble and fall.
Well, I'm in the fortunate position that the rest of the story still kind of holds together. It's just that the antagonist, who's really in the background most of the time until the ending, so there's not a lot that's got to be changed. It's just there's some things in my mind that need to be changed, and then I need to change some scenes that haven't been written yet, and maybe change a couple of scenes that I have written, but nothing big.
That's a fantastic position to be in.
But it's just completely flummoxed me, because I don't have an answer for how to fix this plot hole. Basically, it's not a plot hole, it's just a story problem. But it's, and I don't know, do I go to the end? I can't go to the end, because I don't really understand the antagonist yet. I understood the antagonist perfectly, but she is not bad enough.
Okay, so you just answered your own question there. Okay, when you're plotting, right, you're figuring out the story. But sometimes in the figuring out of the story, some of the characters are not developed enough in the plotting so that you don't understand their motivations. And you thought that you did until, as the story came together, it didn't have that weight or that gravitas that you needed it to have. So it's – and since most of it doesn't even show up on the page till later, and it's just a matter of you going back to that character and trying to figure out, understanding the character or recreating or restructuring the character in such a way that it lives up to the expectations of the story. But the fact that so much of it isn't on the page, and that the little bit that is, you can write around it or rewrite it, that's really fantastic. It's a great position to be in, because that is not difficult to fix so long as you can figure out the character to the level that you feel it should be.
How important is it? Your bad guys are always really bad. And
not always. Sometimes the books are a little vague on evil versus good, and then there's no real black and white.
Well, yes, that's true. But well, I'm trying to think of you're right. In The Mask, that's a good example. It's a really good example.
And in The Innocent, and even in The Catch, it's just people who have conflicting motivations that spin the world upside down for other people, and some of them are, their choices have created really bad situations for other people, even though there's not a person you can hate in the story.
If I'm hearing you correctly, and I'm applying it to my situation, it's like the character motivations may be fine, and the character may be fine. It just could be that I need a couple of scenes and a couple of actions that really ramp up the danger in the story.
If you're talking about what's at stake for your characters and what they have to lose, and a villain or antihero or whatever that is capable of hurting their lives badly enough because they're either obsessed. I mean, you can have a story where someone is, I mean, I can't pronounce that stupid book, but the play,
Les Miserables?
Yes, that one. Like the police officer in that book, in that story, who mm-hmm. is the villain, he is completely righteous in his own eyes. He is a good guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in the life of the people, the lives of the people he's affecting, he's a bad guy because his self-righteous law above compassion approach to things can completely destroy those he can have power over. So you can have a villain who is 100% good too, but just that his goodness is not empathetic enough to reach in and benefit the life of the people that he's hurting. If, I know that's all jumbled in the way that words that came out, but I hope somehow it makes sense in the concept behind it.
No, it's a really good example. And in my case, the antagonist is more of a thief than, you know, this super bad person. It's just a person who's stealing money from lots of people and manipulating lots of people so that she can continue to do this. And that doesn't ratchet up the danger enough to my protagonist.
Well, it could, hypothetically, having not read your story and not know anything, if the thief, who maybe isn't such a horrible, vicious person to begin with, it feels afraid and tries to frame somebody else for her thing, or starts using other people to try and hurt that person to protect herself, because fear of getting caught can create extreme reactions, and fear can create extreme reactions in people and cause them to do things that maybe is even against their own moral code, because that self-preservation instinct kicks in, and good people can do really bad things when put in a particular situation. And sometimes really good people can do really bad things because they feel is the morally correct choice, and they do not see the people they are doing those bad things against as people. So when the motivation and the inner life of the villain is clear, even if it's not on paper, if it's clear to you as the author, then that gives you the tools to ramp up the tension in a way that stays true to the character and true to the story.
Okay, because her inner motivation is clear to me, and I really like that part of it. It's just I haven't seen a way of ramping up the danger, but as you were talking, something popped into my head, and I wrote it down, so I think that I'm not very far off track. I was thinking I was, you know, like a quarter mile off track, and I might be 100 yards off track, and it might be easier to pull back than I thought.
I think that plot holes that involve motivations or the why, answering the whys, why did so-and-so do that, those are the easiest ones to fix, because they're not story problems so much as clarity issues.
Now, it's funny, though, that you say that, and so many critical reviews that I've read of other people's work mention motivation, like, this person wouldn't have done that. That didn't make sense, so I tossed the book aside on page 7, you know, whatever it may be.
Well, I've had people say that about my books.
Hopefully not on page 7.
No. I mean, the one that I got it the worst with was The Catch. And in it, you know, it could be that I, you know, because I write a lot of nuance and I leave a lot of things implied, and I didn't spell out this person is depressed and doesn't give a crap whether they live or die. And by taking this assignment on, it gives them a reason to stay alive, even if they might get killed in the process of doing it. So because I didn't spell that out in black and white, there were so many people who were just like, I don't get her motivations. I don't get her motivations. Why is she even caring about saving these people when they're all despicable? And I'm like, okay, well, obviously, there was a failure on the part of the author to clarify well enough. And so to them, that was just a gaping plot hole.
Mm-hmm. So plot holes can be in the eye of the beholder then, to a certain extent.
I believe so. And I know for me, as a storyteller and as an author, I'll back that up and say, for me as a reader, I don't like to read books where the authors over-explain everything, where I'm just like a kindergartner and they're trying to tell me how to spell words or something. You know, it's almost feels a little bit juvenile or a little bit insulting, and it has nothing to do with the level of the writing. Like if it's a YA book or a middle grade book or a book for adult readers, it has to do with the, here, dear reader, let me show you how dumb you are. You know, and I saw it once in one book and I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, so-and-so's spidey sense started tingling. Spidey sense is when XYZ, and I'm like banging my head against the table going, oh my God. But it was a very popular author, and readers love those series of books. And obviously, I am not the right audience, or most readers just are happy with it. They don't care. I write not like that. I leave a lot to be implied. And because of that, it's quite possible, because people are familiar with that style and used to having things over-explained to them, that when they're forced to think and figure things out, if they're in a rush or if they're in a hurry or they're trying to blow through one of these books in the same way they would one of those others, it doesn't work. And yes, there are absolutely going to be what appear to be plot holes. I've even had readers leave reviews about how I don't know how to write grammatically. Like, none of my sentences made sense. And I'm thinking, well, the copy editor thought they did, and the editor thought they did, and my agent thought they did, and half my readers thought they, all these other readers thought they did. So it might not be me here who's not making sense. But to that person, it didn't make any sense. So very long, convoluted to your question, answer to your question is, yes, plot holes can be situational and according to the reader. And so the challenge as an author is to make sure that enough is explained so that going into it, those plot holes aren't there. And then the rest of it, you sort of leave to fate because you can't control it. And if you want to get to the level where you're over-explaining everything, well, that's okay too, if that's how you write and that's your voice and everything. But you want to make sure that the motivations are all there, that the bridges between why and the events and as things happen, that they're all there. And I think one of the biggest things that most readers will find to be a plot hole is when stuff is just contrived or too convenient. Mm-hmm. That's a hole in their minds, because it wouldn't have been possible to have this story without that, oh, how convenient thing to happen. So when I'm going through story, I'm really trying to avoid convenient situations that, you know, make it too easy. And somebody once explained, I think it was at one of the conferences, I heard an author explain, and it just went a light bulb off in my head, is that you can make the most horrible things happen to your characters in the most contrived, convenient ways, and nobody will say bleep about it because it's bad. But if the simplest convenient thing happens that's good, that helps the character, there will be howls of protest. So if you need to have contrivances or things like that in your story to make it stick together, just make sure it's when bad things happen to your characters and not when good things happen.
Quick side note, and then we'll wrap up. This has been an interesting show. I was reading something the other day, and I was reading it as one of those books that it was okay. I just wanted it to be over, but I did want to finish. I wanted to I wanted to see it through to the end. And there was actually a point where I was praying that the author would just have a contrived situation that would happen so that we wouldn't have to go through four more days of tedious knocking on doors to find the answer. You know, like, just please let him just let a letter show up with the answer and get to the end.
Right.
It didn't happen. No, it didn't happen. But I did finish, and I was glad that I did, but I probably won't read another of those. So that is it for this show that I'm not really sure what it was about. We were talking about plot problems, I guess. So probably in the show notes and the title, I'll describe it a little bit differently than we did in the intro.
But it does give me a call to action.
What is your call to action?
Well, this is so not anything we ever talked about, but I would like to understand from our readers and our listeners, both writers and readers, because I know that not everybody listens to this show as a writer, what is a plot hole? To you, what is a plot hole in a story? And then maybe we could actually revisit this topic from a more educated position.
That's a great call to action. And on that note, I think that that we have exhausted the topic for today, but I hope we get to revisit it again from, as Taylor said, a more educated position. So thanks, everybody, for listening.
So glad to have you with us.